Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yes, we are. It is the Spiegel and Parkin Show. Matt Spiegel out today. This segment brought to you by KFC. KFC's signature pot pie is filled with delicious Kentucky Fried Chicken and veggies and topped with golden flaky crust, all for just $3.99. KFC, it's finger-licking good. All right. We're going to bring some of my weekend degenerate text message conversations to the air here. One of my best friends, he's the host of First Things First, weekday mornings with Chris Carter on Fox Sports 1. You can follow him on Twitter, at GetNickWright. He is Nick Wright. Nick, thanks for the time, man. How's it going?
All right, hold on, a couple things. One is, Spiegel's not there today?
Correct.
I never would have agreed to do this. Second of all, yeah. I heard you just do that read for the KFC pot pies.
Yeah.
That's a top five underrated fast food item. I say it 100%. The KFC pot pies and the KFC famous bowls are two of my favorite items that you can get in a drive-thru. But that is an unpaid endorsement by me, and those are hard to come by, but it's good to talk to you even without Matt Spiegel.
$3.99, okay. That endorsement from you is going to get me out there to try it.
Yeah, no, they're quite good. You got to crush the top of it in it, mix it around. It's good. But go ahead.
All right, no, sounds good. How much of a, like, knowing our history of gambling, how much of a miracle do you find it to be? Like a statistical improbability that neither of us lost money on the Stephon Diggs touchdown.
I mean, the only reason I didn't was because I had it wrapped up in a lot of parlays that involved the Steelers money line.
Okay.
So like, I would have lost some money, theoretically, had those bets not already died earlier in the week. I mean, I loved the same. This is how bad I am at gambling. I never bet before Sunday mornings. You know this. But I was so certain that I was on the correct side of the Saints plus 4.5 that I bet it early. I was sure that the lines were going to move against me. So I did a Steelers money line parlay along with the Saints plus 4.5. And of course the Steelers money line would have gone more in my favor, and I could have gotten the Saints plus 5.5. So no, I mean, it's a loss. I should have lost that bet as well. I had just lost it earlier.
Yeah, because I saw some people were tweeting you your playoff bracket from before the playoffs. Like, have you gotten one thing right in the NFL playoffs yet, Nick? Honestly, one thing.
Oh, let me think. In the first, well, yeah, I mean, technically.
Other than the Patriots.
No, the Patriots I didn't have right. I had the Patriots losing to the Chiefs in a game that didn't get played.
Okay, yeah.
I had the Jags beating the Titans. I had the Jags winning their first playoff game. I think that's the only game, like, if according to my bracket, I got right. Yeah, because I had the Rams. Both my Super Bowl, my Super Bowl pick was Steelers over Rams. Neither won a playoff game.
I know. And the only reason I'm doing this to you right now...
What is this? What is going on? What insight is your audience getting into? What's these 4 minutes? The most interesting thing your audience has heard is how good the KFC pot pies are. The rest of this, you're just mocking me.
Yeah, that's right. Well, because no one knows anything, and it's okay to admit it. Like, none of us know anything about what is going to happen in these games, and I feel like it's totally fine. Because Blake Bortles wins a game in which Ben Roethlisberger has 500 yards and 5 touchdowns. Like, I feel like if you can at least admit on the front end that none of us know anything, it makes all of the stuff we do around sports a lot easier.
Oh, so I get it. So you, one of the themes of your show today is no one knows anything, which is why I got the early morning text message. Nick, I want to have you on as a guest. Can't really explain why. It'll make sense when I talk to you.
Yeah, exactly,
like,
right.
I'm like the patient zero for no one knows anything.
Right, you're the guy who said the Warriors would be worse with Kevin Durant. Exactly. So I'm like, I got to bring on the guy who's
Now you're bringing up old stuff that I don't think you want to get into that debate. The context of that our discussion is a separate one, and I somewhat stand by that take, but that's neither here nor there.
Okay, but I find that to be, I like that about sports when we can admit it, because it leads to hopefully making some more sense of all of this stuff. Separately from that, the ending of the Vikings game, Does it go, like, where is that historically? Because to me, it's, put it up there. We got to come up with a name for it, but it's Music City Miracle. It's anything. That is a historic singular play that'll be remembered for generations.
The name that people, I think, were coming up was Hail Millie, because that old 100-year-old lady they kept showing in the games, her name was Millie. I like that one. I feel so terribly for Marcus Williams. He played so well all year. He played really well in that game. And it was just, you could tell he panicked, like, oh, I can't pass interfere. And he just did the absolute wrong thing in the moment. At the time, I was yelling for Diggs to step out of bounds because I just assumed there was another player coming. And then there wasn't, and he scored. And it was as remarkable of a finish as I've ever seen. It's the only walk-off non-overtime touchdown in playoff history. And, I mean, it was spectacular. Now, I think the Vikings are better than the Saints. Like, I think the right team won the game, but it didn't look like the right team was going to win that game.
No, it did not. Any good stories from Chris, your co-host, Chris Carter, on First Things First, being on the sidelines for it?
I mean, so Chris was there. He talked to Stephon Diggs before the game and was like, hey, man, we used to have good wide receivers in Minnesota. Like, gave him a hard time, and Diggs came up to him after and was like, what do you think of this? And so Chris pretended to shine his shoes. Adam Thielen had told Chris, because Adam Thielen's from Mankato, which is where they do training camp. Adam Thielen had told Chris he grew up watching him and rooting for him. He had told Chris that on the show a couple months ago, and so Chris went up to him before the game yesterday, said, hey, man, our roles are reversed now. Like, I just got to watch you. And, like, Chris is still a diehard Vikings fan. I mean, he got teary-eyed on the air talking about it today. I just don't know if people realize what a tortured fan base that is. That is the original Hail Mary was against them. I think the team's been to 4 Super Bowls and lost all of them. Obviously, the Gary Anderson kick, a guy who hadn't missed a kick all year, it's the best team in football, 15-1 Vikings. He misses a kick to go to the Super Bowl. People remember the Blair Walsh play just a couple years ago, missing the 27-yarder. Brett Favre, why would you even ponder passing when they could go to the Super Bowl in 2009? Like, this team has had such awful luck, and to finally have the luck go their way, because I thought they were screwed again. It's gotten lost in the wash, Danny, but they had the Saints in a 4th-and-11, and the Saints picked it up. Like, I thought, okay, well, now you're going to lose this football game in more heartbreaking fashion, and they were able to turn it around.
Yeah, I'm rooting for him, and I'm not even seeing as much like Bears fan angst about it as I would have thought I would have because of the Bears and Vikings history. So I find them to be likable, and the story's great, and I hope that they play a Super Bowl in their home stadium. The fan base absolutely deserves it. We're talking to Nick Wright, First Things First, weekday mornings with Chris Carter and Jenna Wolf on Fox Sports 1. I saw you say something on Twitter that I disagreed with about Blake Bortles and how if he wins that game, he gets the $19 million and they bring him back next year. Like, we just saw the Titans make a decision that removed emotion from it with Mike Mularkey. Hey, he won a playoff game. We're going to say all these nice things, but then we're going to mutually agree to part ways. Like, Blake Bortles just is what he is. He had his 3rd best season out of 4 in passing yards this year, his 3rd best season out of 4 in touchdowns, his 2nd best season out of 4 in yards per attempt. He had a career high in completion percentage, but it was still only 60%. Like, Blake Bortles isn't good. Why should one playoff win where he completed 14 of 26 passes bring him back for $19 million next year?
I'm not saying it should, I'm saying it will. 100% he's the quarterback of the Jags next year on that $19 million option. 100%.
Why? I mean, do you think that Belichick would do it that way?
No, but teams aren't run by Belichick, and you do have to ask yourself, what are the alternatives?
I mean, they're a 9-point dog in Foxborough this week with Blake Bortles. What do you think they are with Alex Smith?
Well, but we're certain they'd get Alex Smith.
No, we're not. Like, we're not certain of anything.
Right, but so that's what I'm saying is, let me ask it a different way. Of the quarterbacks we expect to be available, other than Alex Smith, is there anyone that you know you'd rather have?
I probably would rather have Kirk Cousins.
Oh, no. I don't think I'd rather have Kirk Cousins at a guaranteed deal and tie yourself to Kirk Cousins for the next 4 or 5 years. And that's going to cost an enormous amount of money. I just, I'd rather have Blake next year than a rookie quarterback, especially.
Hey, Nick, I don't know what you're doing right now, but this is like when I talk to you on the phone. Are you walking around or moving?
Can you not hear me?
No, I can. You cut out.
No, I accidentally hit speaker with my face. You know I do that sometimes.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Alex Smith would be a better option for them. Yes. I don't know that they know they can get Alex Smith. I'm just telling you, Blake, they've already picked up the option. They just have to not decline it. They 100%. Blake Bortles is playing for the Jacksonville Jaguars on a $19 million fifth-year option next year. 100%. You talk about gambling, I'll lay 8-1.
Well, I probably need better odds if you think it's 100%.
Well, I mean, maybe, but you think I'm wrong. So come on, 8-1 is the best I'm going to do. What do you want? What do you want here, Parkins? We're going to negotiate terms on the air?
No. We'll negotiate terms off the air. And I'm just saying, I think Doug Marrone's a really good coach, and I think that organization is run pretty well right now, and I think that they're poised to be in Super Bowl contention for the next couple of years. So that's the one position where they clearly could use an upgrade. It would not surprise me in the least bit if they decided to upgrade there instead of giving Blake Bortles a $16 million raise.
But even if they draft a quarterback, they'll keep Bortles for the one more year.
Yeah, that is true. That's true. If they go the rookie route, they will keep Bortles like the Bears had with Mike Glennon for 1 year. That is true.
And, I mean, I guess Eli's an option, but, I mean, Eli's old as hell. And, like, I don't know that Eli's that good. And I want to make this clear. I'm no Blake Bortles fan. I said before the year, I thought it was malpractice of the Jags that's the team that should have signed Cap, that was ready to go and just needed adequate quarterback play. Amazingly, they kind of got adequate quarterback play from Bortles this year. And I don't know how they did it with just 14 completions, but they also just scored 45 on Pittsburgh with only one defensive touchdown.
Nick Wright from First Things First is our guest. You and I always get upset about coaches who do things against basic math and clock management and game theory and stuff like that. Mike Tomlin not kicking deep when it's before the two-minute warning and just like nonsensical things that give your team a worse chance at winning. What I want to know, though, is because it's the most frustrating and we think we can do it, right, and we know that we could do it better, but they're also doing 100 other things. They've got people in their headset. They're calling plays in a lot of situations, either on offense or defense. I feel like we maybe overrate how big of a piece of coaching that is. Like, I don't know. Like, that's not a fireable offense, clearly, for Mike Tomlin or even most of these guys. I wonder if where you think in terms of how much we get mad about it versus how big of a part of their actual jobs it is in terms of game management.
I'm sure there are other things much more difficult and more important. This is the one thing you could farm out to someone else and have it be their only job. Have it be their only job and have it be incredibly lucrative. I mean, post an ad on MIT's campus. Want to work 20 Sundays a year, $50,000 a Sunday. And have the best and brightest supply and hire him to just be behind the coach. And you have to trust the guy 100% of the time, and he can never be wrong. And he would never be wrong because it's such a lucrative job for him. Like, the Tomlin, the not kicking away thing isn't an MIT question. That is just purely in the moment. Tomlin thought, we have a better chance of recovering an onside kick than forcing a three and out. I think that's insanity, but that's clearly what he thought in that spot. They butchered the clock at the end, but some of that was on Roethlisberger because they had a first and goal from the 5 with 40 seconds left. I don't blame them for the harder part is the touchdown. I don't blame them for going for the touchdown there. You just can't get an intentional grounding and then throw the next play in bounds. Like, that's absurd. On the flip side, though, a guy I want to give credit to this morning, because no one's going to talk about this, is Mike Zimmer managing the clock brilliantly. He started using his timeouts with the lead when the Saints, after they completed that 4th-and-11, like that, it's totally forgotten. Most coaches right there, they're like, I don't want to give New Orleans extra time. We already have the lead. Like, no. Zimmer used his timeouts perfectly, and it's the only thing that allowed for the miracle finish we saw. So Zimmer handled it as well as you possibly can handle it. I want to give him credit for it.
Hey, Nick, I'm going to let you go on this. And I should have told you I was going to ask you to do this ahead of time, but I'm confident that you'll come through here. There's no one I know who is more educated on like the history of racial injustice in this country and more compassionate on issues like this. So I'm curious, as so many people take to social media and just post, you know, their most milquetoast favorite Martin Luther King quote.
A platitude.
Exactly. I am curious what lesson or thoughts you feel like people should have on Martin Luther King Day.
The vast majority of America hated him. 80% of America did not approve of the civil rights protests. Over 60% of American, 80% of America thought of white America, I should say. That's a very important distinction. 80% of white America thought Martin Luther King's movement was hurting race relations in this country. Over 60% of white America believed that they disagreed with the protests and the methods of protest. Martin Luther King was a radical. He was a nonviolent radical, but he was a radical. He was treated as such. The FBI wiretapped him, and they tried to convince him to commit suicide. They told his wife he was cheating on her. He was an enemy of the state for the United States of America no less than 50 years ago. And I say that to say this. You are not doing Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the most important American ever, justice by simply remembering three lines of I Have a Dream. If you want to do him justice, understand what he was fighting for, why he was fighting for it, and why, if he were still alive to this day, he would still be fighting. And then understand why he and nearly all of his contemporaries were assassinated for what they were trying to accomplish, and see what you can do to further that mission. And recognize that right now he is very popular. He was not in the time. And many of the people right now who claim to support him and support his message sure don't act as such. And I would just encourage people to read more of his speeches than I Have a Dream, read more about what our own government did to him and did to combat his message, and ask your parents and your grandparents where they stood and have those uncomfortable conversations. Thank you for that opportunity, Danny.
At Get Nick Wright on Twitter and weekday mornings on Fox Sports 1 with Chris Carter and Jenna Wolf. It's First Things First. Nick, I'll talk to you, buddy, because I think we're going to tease the Eagles and the Patriots next weekend.
Talk to you later, bro.
All right, man. That's Nick Wright. Everyone should give him a follow. Vincent Goodwill coming up on the show at 11. And then some of the things from Cubs convention, including, I feel like just the one thing at this point that the organization is getting wrong. It's Spiegel and Parkins on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Spiegel and Parkins on the Score, even with Spieg's gone. Got to talk some baseball. People are like, oh, you don't like baseball as much as Speaks. Right, exactly. Still really like baseball. It's just not as much as
Speaks. Just means you're a normal person.
Right. Just not as much as Spiegel. I was at Cubs convention on Friday and then did not take it in over the weekend, but was following along with the updates and the beat reporters and the Score had some great coverage. Saturday and Sunday morning, Bruce Levine's show in particular. Saturday morning, I did not catch Joe's show, so I apologize. I'm not choosing Bruce's show over Joe's show. I just happened to catch some of Bruce's show. My apologies, Joe. But the whole way that Tom Ricketts is handling the Sammy Sosa thing is bizarre to me, and I'll admit my bias on this one. I became a huge Cubs fan around the time of Sammy Sosa, right? I'm born in 1986, summer of 98. I'm 12 years old, right? So that is your heyday, right? For sports fandom, what, 9 to 14, like that, for me anyway, like that age range is when you're the biggest fan and you're collecting the cards and the present that you would get for Christmas was going to a game with your dad and, you know what I mean, like that. Those formative years, and that's why I'm the biggest fan of the Bulls and Cubs. The second Bulls three-peat and summer of 98 Cubs season with Sammy Sosa. Like those are my two teams that I still have a bunch of fandom for.
Are you over Reggie Miller pushing off Jordan in game six yet?
Well, it's funny. I hate Reggie Miller because of it. like, as a broadcaster, as a human, as a player. But, you know, we got the six and Reggie got zero, so I'm kind of okay with it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. But so like, I always say everybody in our job has biases. It's the ones who admit the biases to you that you can trust. And I will admit that I've got a bias for Sammy Sosa. I loved watching him play. I fell in love with baseball watching him play. He was fun. He was charismatic. I remember wanting to be there for batting practice and him, like, you couldn't be there late for a game where Sammy was playing because you had to see him sprint to right field. Like, you just had to be there. You had to see him sprint to right, and like the energy and the hop and everything was great. And I know all about the complications. I know about leaving early. I know about the shattered boombox. I know about the corked bat. I know about the links to steroids and all this stuff. Like, I'm not saying that I'm naive to the realities of the situation, but I think there's some logical breakdowns here in how Tom Ricketts is speaking about how Sammy needs to come clean before he could be welcomed back. And you know how I do when I feel like there's some logical breakdowns and things. I want to parse through it. So after the update, let's see if we can poke some holes in Tom Ricketts' logic on the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Danny Parkins here with you, Spiegel and Parkins on the score, brought to you by... I don't know how to pronounce that one. I'm going to... The next segment will be brought to you by them. I should do the reaction. Look at the read ahead of time. Go ahead and laugh at me, Campy. Go ahead. That's fine. I see what you're doing over there. I should have checked it. I looked down. I was like, oh, God. There's some phonetic spelling in that one, and I don't want to mess it up. It's sponsorship dollars here, Campy, okay? Serious operation we're running here. But 312-644-6767. Tom Ricketts is the owner of the Cubs, so what he says goes, right? It's his money, it's his team, whatever. Like, he is the end-all and be-all on this stuff, so I get it. But I, as a Cubs fan, would like to see Sammy Sosa back at Wrigley Field. I, as a Cubs fan, beyond just Sammy Sosa Day, I, as a Cubs fan, would like to see Sammy Sosa's number retired and on that flagpole in right field. Like, I am a huge Sammy Sosa fan. To me, in the pre-World Series era of the Cubs, he's on the Mount Rushmore of all-time Cubs for me. Like, I think you've got Banks and you've got Bernie and you got Banks and you got Billy and you got Santo and you got Sammy. Like, to me, that's the four. Fergie Jenkins just outside of it. But that's, again, for me, my own personal biases. But what I would want to see them do is to help Sammy with whatever he needs to say publicly to pass the Tom Ricketts test. Because Tom Ricketts said, I really believe that all the players from that era who were in that kind of steroid era, I think we owe them a lot of understanding. We have to put ourselves in their shoes and be very, very sympathetic to everything, all the decisions they had to make. And certainly, as it turned out, after testing had begun in 2002, a large number of players test positive. Players of that era owe us a little bit of honesty, too. I feel like the only way to turn this page is just to put everything on the table. That's the way I feel. So, given that that's the way that Tom Ricketts feels, that's how we have to operate on this one. But where I see some logical breakdowns are, one, why does Tom Ricketts feel like he owes him something when Sammy did what he did? He did not even own the team, but the asset at which Tom Ricketts owns, the Chicago Cubs, is undeniably a more valuable asset because of Sammy Sosa's contributions, right? The Cubs made money and gained popularity off of Sammy Sosa. That is a team that now is owned by Tom Ricketts. So Tom Ricketts has profited and owns something valuable, at least in part, because of Sammy Sosa's contributions. Also, it's not as if they have some sort of altruistic, utopic, zero tolerance policy on people who have been linked to the steroids era. They employed Manny Ramirez. They didn't ask for a public apology. He didn't have to fall on any sort of sword. They employed Manny Ramirez. And then here's the part where it gets a little bit more complicated. Sammy never failed a test publicly. Now, he was linked to that 2003 leaked New York Times report. He was on the list. Like, I'm not sitting here telling you that Sammy Sosa did not cork his bat. I'm not sitting here telling you that Sammy Sosa did not use steroids, okay? I'm not an idiot. Plenty of things to the contrary, including my inability to pronounce that word in that read. So I understand that there will be people that will roll your eyes at that one. But here's where I think it gets interesting, and Joe Sheehan actually pointed this out on Twitter. I don't subscribe to his newsletter. Maybe I should. Is that New York Times leaked list was the same list that David Ortiz was on, that the current commissioner of baseball was discounting as unfair and unverifiable to those players, that they should not be scapegoated because of one leaked list that was not made to be public, that was also not cross-referenced when the Red Sox were doing all of the celebrations around David Ortiz and Big Poppy. Now, David Ortiz did not leave the Red Sox in a bad way. David Ortiz did not cork his bat. David Ortiz had huge postseason moments. David Ortiz is a gregarious, outgoing personality who is still on television. And let's be honest, some of the things that have happened to Sammy Sosa have ranged from sad to downright weird. Like, Sammy is not the most sympathetic figure, and he does not comport himself in the absolute best of ways nowadays. But did he use? Yeah. Is his legacy tarnished by how it ended? Sure. But to me, if the Cubs need Sammy Sosa to say something, help him with it. What it sounds like Tom Ricketts is doing to me is he's like, you've got to come to me hat in hand, and you've got to beg, and you've got to plea, and you've got to apologize, and all of this stuff. Just do some sort of half apology. Like, I was in part of an era where lots of things were happening, and I have regrets for how it ended with the Cubs, and it's unfortunate that this has been something that has been associated to me, but I'm looking forward to being a contributing member of the Cubs organization for years to come, and when I run out onto the Wrigley Field, I want to throw my first pitch from right field. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just like help him out. Sammy's not good at this. But the fans, I think, would like to see him. Would you? Like, do you? We don't need to see him because Chris Bryant has passed him and Rizzo has passed him and now they're winning, and so it's not a huge deal. But so much of being a Cubs fan is about your past. They gave Bartman a World Series ring. And Sammy Sosa's a big part of my past.
But isn't so much what you're saying is right, but doesn't it mean that it's just as much on Sammy? Because all these guys that we praise for just giving, I don't even, maybe a half apology. Andy Pettit, oh, he's so great. All he said is, I am sorry. Never even admitted to what he did. Manny Ramirez, who the Cubs hired, by the way, he said, I made mistakes. That's all you have to do, and all is forgiven immediately in baseball. Tom Ricketts saying everything on the table, I just don't really buy that.
I'm with you, but that's why, just help him. Like, why can't they just craft a statement and he signs off on it and here we go? Like, the idea of him needing to come to, like, he owes us something. That puts the onus, like, well, I have to admit that I injected myself every third Thursday of the month during baseball season or something like that. And that's grandstanding to me when you've profited off of Sammy and the other guys are not held to that. Like, think about A-Rod right now. And I know that A-Rod's apologized, but he was banned from the sport. He was a total pariah. Now he's considered the best broadcaster. He's out there. Everybody loves him. No one thinks about it anymore. I don't think that there's a huge percentage of people that if Sammy Sosa ran out to right field, got Sammy Sosa Day, had his number retired, had his name flying on that flag in right field, I don't think there'd be a ton of people saying, you know, he still hasn't apologized. Do you, Joe?
No. If he just said something to the effect of, I've made mistakes, I'm sorry, I wish all of this never happened. If he says that, oh, it's great. Welcome back to the family. They'll have the Sammy Sosa Day. They'll have him at the convention from year to year. The other part of this is he's not a great guy. He's not liked a lot in that organization.
Well, that's right. That's the other part of it. And how it ended with and Kerry Wood and guys that are still ambassadors and all that.
They don't like him, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely a part of it. So, but I'm not even saying he has to be an ambassador. Like, you don't have to employ Sammy Sosa. I'm not making that argument.
To be welcome is what you're getting at.
Yeah, to be welcome. Yeah. Like, he could come to the convention with Derek Lee. Like, he can throw out a first pitch. He can sing the stretch. And I do think he should have his number retired. But I understand that that's probably never going to happen. But I do think that he should. John and Lyle, you're on the score.
Yeah, just your logic about how Sammy drove up the price of the franchise and made it a greater value for him. it actually did him a disservice because he had to buy the franchise at a higher rate because of Sammy's steroid use. So he did Sammy using steroids actually did him a disservice.
Well, no, but I understand. I get that argument, right? That he drove up the acquisition price for the team, but
right.
he sold jerseys. He turns people into Cubs fans. And those people are still Cubs fans.
It still drove up the price on him.
No, I understand.
But at a lesser price, had Sammy not used steroids.
Right, but I'm not as big of a Cubs fan today if not for Sammy Sosa. And there's probably a whole generation of people like that who fell in love with the team around that same time that I did, partly because of Sammy Sosa.
But what Rickard's done, he's making Cub fans with the World Series win. That's despite Sammy and everything. He did that on his own by putting the people in them. So his fan base and the value of the company would still be as high as it is now. He just bought it at an inflated value because of Sammy's.
But it wasn't an inflated value. He didn't get a bad deal on the purchase price for the Cubs. The Cubs have gone up in like $1 billion in valuation since Ricketts has owned it because they won. And of course they won. He had nothing to do with them winning the World Series. Of course. My point is that Sammy Sosa is a huge part of Cubs history. He's a Cubs legend. They have employed people who have been linked more directly to steroid use in the past than he has. And there is a sizable percentage of the fan base that would like to see it. I'm not ranting and raving over it. I don't think that they're going to employ him. They're not the Padres, right? They're not some team that like desperately needs a day with an old timer to sell a few tickets. Like they don't need Sammy Sosa. They're going to sell out every game without Sammy Sosa. They'd sell out every game if Sammy Sosa was welcome back. So I understand that the Cubs are operating in this negotiation from a tremendous point of leverage. I'm not going to argue that they're not. I'm just saying I'd like to see it. And Ricketts' logic of that he owes us something, you did not hold Manny Ramirez to that standard. And baseball is not holding David Ortiz to that standard off of being on the same list that Sammy Sosa was. And Sammy's not good at the PR side of it. So help him out a little bit. Don't make him come to you. That's all I'm saying. It just feels petty at this point. And like, what else is there? They're such a good organization. What else is there that you're really lamenting these days? So just check this box off. You fix the Bartman thing, now fix this thing, and then there'll be nothing left. We'll talk to Vinny Goodwill about what the Bulls can get from Nico at 11. It's Spiegel and Parkins on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Best moment from Cubs convention was when they're asked on the panel what their favorite moment from the past season was. And because it was a little bit of a tougher question this year because they did not win the World Series. And Contreras says, it's the John Lester pickoff, and we remember talking about it when it happened, how happy everybody was that they did it. Well, we got the story, and he said, I told that mother bleeper to throw that mother bleeping ball over to first. That's a beautiful thing. Because I also remember when we had the luncheon series at Del Frisco's, and we had him up there, and we were like, so, you know, how do you approach the different pitchers? And he's like, well, you know, I don't make jokes to Lackey because he's a crazy person, but I do try to crack jokes to guys like Hendricks because he's so serious, but he's such a nice guy that he can take it. And basically, I don't say anything to John Lester because he's John Lester. Well, got a little bit more comfortable and confident as the season went on, and he had a monster year, and all of a sudden he's MFing John Lester on the hill. It's pretty cool.
And still the fact that Coomer called it. Hadn't been there all year, and Coomer calls it.
Yep. Pretty amazing. It's a great broadcasting moment. Some of the texters on the Sosa stuff, like I get why it's polarizing. I do. Your team doesn't, people fall in line with the team, right? All the time. We see that happen in sports. Oh, well, the team must be right and all that. So if the team says Sammy can't come back until he does this, a lot of people fall in line with it, even with some of the logical fallacies, that I've pointed out. And reasonable minds can disagree on this. But texter writes in, I'm a 29-year-old black male. Sammy is the reason why I love the Cubs and baseball, him and Kerry Wood. That's how I feel. Like, that's where I'm at. Those are my two favorite Cubs of all time. And it just doesn't feel right.
Doesn't feel right that the guy who hit all those homers that contributed to saving baseball, that baseball profited so much off of him. Like, look around the sport. Manny Ramirez involved in the sport. Pudge Rodriguez in the Hall of Fame. Barry Bonds was a hitting coach. Manny Ramirez, A-Rod, all of these guys that were a part of that era. Barry Bonds hasn't had some huge apology tour, and he's been employed as a hitting coach. So, given that Ricketts been on the team then, and that they've employed Manny Ramirez, and I'm not even going to go to, they've also employed other people of less than reputable, you know, moral standards. Like, people are texting about Chapman and Addison Russell and other things. Like, I don't even want to do the apples to oranges comparison there. Like, just what has their stance been on people who have been linked to steroids? They employed Manny Ramirez, and they're making Sammy Sosa beg for his supper. And I guess I would just want them to help him out with it. Because I do think it would be better off for some fans and the organization if he was there. Texter writes in, when Sammy Sosa came to bat, the world stopped and you watched. That's Michael Jordan territory. He's not MJ, but that was the phenomenon of Sammy Sosa in the late 90s. So, is Sammy perfect? No. Did he handle everything well? No, not even close. And he's admitted to some of it, but he hasn't done the full mea culpa. And I think it comes across as grandstanding to me when they do it that way. 312-644-6767. Joe on the northwest side disagrees. What's up, Joe?
Well, good morning, guys. I got a great show as always.
Thanks, man.
You know, I'm looking at the word integrity here. You know, it wasn't only Sosa that put fans in the ballpark during those home run derbies. You know, you got to give credit to the Roger Maris single season home run record that everybody was chasing, which also brought out the national media attention, you know, and a lot of curiosity seekers that were really interested in baseball that come out to the park anyways during that, you know, with the McGuire Sosa Bonds chase. But, you know,
yeah, but at Wrigley,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, when the Rockies played the Reds, people weren't in the seats because of the home run chase for Maris. Like, people were in the seats for the home run chase for Maris because of Sammy Sosa.
And then you had curiosity people coming there to get the baseball because they're looking at the value of baseball memorabilia. You should have seen the street out there. There might have been more people in the street than there was, you know, inside the ballpark. But when you look at Sosa,
I was in the street sometimes.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah, I'm sure. It was unbelievable. But when you look at the steroids, the cracked cork bat. I was at the game with Tampa Bay Devil Rays when Toby Hall, the catcher, brought it to the umpire's attention.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And they tossed him out of the game after that. But don't forget, there's something here called team and as well as teamwork, you know, which equals integrity, you know. But if you want to look and blame somebody what was going on during those times, guys, you got to look at Commissioner Bud Sellout, because that's what I call him, okay? When the Fed started to crack down on baseball, then all of a sudden things started to change. When Sammy went for the congressional hearing, he couldn't answer questions, but he knew how to answer everybody else's question when he was playing the game, no matter what city he was in. But when
I admitted to my bias on this one, but yeah. I actually gave him a pass on the English-speaking thing in front of Congress because if it's your second, like, imagine testifying under oath through the threat of perjury in your second language.
I understand it's an emotional thing. Look at Rafael Palmeiro deal. Here's a guy that went before the hearing, too.
He did not handle himself well.
He didn't handle himself well. Not only that, they waited a couple of weeks, you know, after that, and they caught him swinging needles instead of swinging bats, you know. And then, you know, they told him, assume the position, you just got busted.
I'm not sitting here telling you, again, Joe, I'm not sitting here telling you, and good call, man, I appreciate the passion. I'm not sitting here telling you that Sammy Sosa did not take steroids. I'm saying that everyone else who took steroids has basically been allowed back into the baseball in their teams. Unless they're Jose Canseco, everyone else is around the game as much as they really want to be. Now, they're not necessarily all in the Hall of Fame, but McGuire involved in baseball, Bonds involved in baseball, Manny Ramirez involved in baseball, A-Rod involved in baseball, Sammy Sosa, that's the one guy that can't come back. I just don't agree with that. Everyone who's in baseball profited off of the steroids era. And a ton of people in baseball willfully were ignorant about the steroids era and looked the other way. And now people want to rain down all of this judgment and grandstanding and say, you've got to come back to us hat in hand and grovel, even though we've employed Manny Ramirez. It doesn't make any sense. And if you want to do something for the fans that feel that way, which some clearly do, help him. Help him craft the message. He's not David Ortiz. He's not good at this stuff. And Sammy's gotten weird. Like where Sammy's life has gone, it's taken some weird turns. It's okay to help him out a little bit. Well, he's got to check all the boxes for us. I don't know that that's going to happen. And again, I thought it was a great point by Joe Sheehan that the link to Ortiz is the same link to Sosa, a leaked New York Times report in 2003. I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's like, to me, it bothers me personally. I think it bothers me personally a lot because of my age. Like, I will admit that. This segment, by the way, I'm going to nail this, brought to you by La Quinta Inn and Suites. How do you win on the road? Stay at La Quinta Inn and Suites. Enjoy stylish lobbies and exciting room renovations. Book now at LQ.com. I took 7 years of Spanish. That wasn't even hard. It was just a new one. So I was like, oh my God, this is new. And I panicked. Okay? My mistake. I think I intimated earlier that Jalen Ramsey was a rookie. I didn't even mean that. I said I fell in love with Jalen Ramsey's game and personality since he was a rookie. I did not mean to imply that he was a rookie this year. But when you're hosting solo, can't check the text line quite as often. So we're going to have a little bit of turbulence sometimes when you're solo. You're just going to have to deal with it. But we're welcoming Vinny Goodwill into the party next. I want to know, when are they going to trade Nico? How much are they going to trade Nico for? When are they going to trade Lopez? How much could they get him for? And what about Holiday? Like, I want to try to put some actual value, expectations of value on the Bulls' assets that they're going to be selling.
Asset or asshat?
Vinny Goodwill next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.